In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about. And some you haven't.
How'd you do that?
Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker on the Fan is poured by Pelican Brewing. Experience your hops differently with Hard Hops Blackberry. Hop-infused hard seltzers.
All right, Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing. Experience your hops differently with Pelican Brewing's new Hard Hops Blackberry Seltzer infused with Strata hops made with real blackberries. Hard hops are available now at a store near you. Let's talk some college football. Changing the pace a little bit. Been a lot of Blazers this week with the NBA draft, the acquisition of players. Let's talk some college football because there's a lot going on in the news in that sport. And joining us now is our good friend, Shehan J. Araja, national college football writer for CBS Sports. You can go give him a follow on Twitter at Shehan J. Araja. Shehan, good morning to you. Thanks for the time out here in Portland. You're down in the state of Texas. This is like one of the worst kept secrets. I'm not sure why we can't just announce it. It's like they extended an invitation. They have 8 hours to consider, but we know what's going to happen by July. Everybody knows
they will accept the invite.
Everybody knows Texas State is going to the Pac-12. You're down there. What do we know about Texas State, and what do you make of the addition for the conference?
Yeah, I feel like this whole offseason has been us writing things like, it's about to, the house case is about to be passed. Texas is about, yeah, so it's good that we hopefully will finally get some resolution on Monday. And that's where things are headed right now. You know, the Texas State has been waiting out essentially a full share invitation to the Pac-12. They've gotten an offer for lesser than a full share, a half share, things like that. But they really wanted to make sure that they'd have the opportunity to be competitive when they moved over to that conference. And while this isn't the Pac-12 of old, it isn't going to, I don't think, be considered a power conference, it's still a really, really good conference with teams like Boise State, San Diego State, and Fresno State. And, you know, Texas State wanted to make sure that they had the opportunity to compete with the best of them. But, you know, this is something that's really been so many years in the making at Texas State. They moved up in football 2011, 2012 from the FCS level. They've been trying to establish themselves as a relevant program. And I think that for them, you know, G.J. Kinney coming in as a head coach, taking them to back-to-back 8-win seasons, it proves that there's potential at this place. And finally, after a long while, it's enough that the Pac-12 decided this is the right program to get us to 8 football members.
So help us understand, because Oregon State, Washington State, they have to do this weird solo Pac-12 kind of Mountain West thing, and then they play for some fake Pac-12 title last year, and they'll play twice this year. What is on the horizon with Texas State? You talk about building a program, and even if it's a lesser share, wanting to be in a good conference, and the Pac-12 set themselves up to be in this position. What kind of team do you think Oregon State and Washington State fans should be expecting to face Texas State when the conference starts?
Well, there's a couple pieces of this, right? One, G.J. Kinney is a dynamic offensive coach, a young star. You know, he played at Tulsa not very long ago. And, you know, he really brings a dynamic style offense. He's done a tremendous job with quarterbacks, brought in Jordan McLeod last year, who was the year before that Sun Belt Player of the Year. T.J. Finley had a tremendous season the year before that. So you're going to get a chance to see dynamic offense. And actually, you know, especially for the folks over at Washington State, I mean, it really should be a very familiar situation. So G.J. Kinney took over for Eric Morris at Incarnate Word, who left to become offensive coordinator with Cam Ward at Washington State. So a lot of similarities there. The other thing, too, is, I mean, it's fascinating, right? Like, with this move, 7 of the 10 FBS conferences next year, or I guess the year after that, are going to have teams in Texas. And so you're going to have an aspect of Texas DNA, both in terms of recruiting stature, in terms of fan support, in terms of interest. By the way, I don't think it can be ignored with this move that a big part of Texas State's rise has been the fact that the Austin Metroplex is the fastest growing metro in the country right now. And I think that there's an opportunity to really maximize on that and not just have an opportunity to play a team from Texas, to recruit students from Texas, but, or recruit players from Texas, but also recruit students from the state of Texas as well.
Interesting. Shehan Jeyaraja is our guest, national college football writer for CBS Sports, at Shehan Jeyaraja. He's got a great piece up right now on the big money behind Texas Tech and how they have transformed themselves into a program that can contend.
Talk about a sleeper potentially.
Talk about a sleeper in the Big 12. Yeah, it's pinned on his Twitter. You can find it at cbssports.com. All of this is speculation, so I just want curious to ask anyways. I mean, we knew that the Pac-12 had to add one more team in order to become a full football conference. Texas State will be that team as of Monday or whenever the date will be. Is there more there? Like, do you think they're done? Is that we're just getting to the base level and let's, tidy it up and that's all we're going to do for now? Do you see a Memphis as a football only? Do you see other schools joining, or is this it for the Pac-12?
I think this is it for right now, because here's the reality. Before 2026, they had to get to 8 teams just to be an NCAA recognized conference, essentially. And so Texas State becomes the 8th. And now here's the other thing with the timing as well. Texas State needed to have this resolved before July 1st, because their buyout to leave the Sun Belt goes from $5 million to $10 million. And that's going to be the case for a lot of programs that could potentially be looking at the Pac-12. So I think that adding Texas State right now is an indication of we're going to roll forward with this for the moment. Now, again, long term, obviously, that could be a different conversation. But I do think that when 2026 comes around, these are the 8 football playing members that will be there. And, it's a fascinating dynamic. I think that we've gotten into this idea of, Power 5, Group of 5. That's kind of how we view college football in so many ways. I think that that's changing. And I think that this sets up one of the more interesting battles, which is, of course, you kind of have the Big 2 with the Big 10 and SEC. You have kind of the medium 2 with the Big 12 and ACC. I think that the battle for supremacy in the non-powers between the Pac-12 and AAC is going to be a fascinating subplot. And what I mean by that, too, is, I think that there are a lot of teams that are currently in the AAC, like Tulane, like Memphis, maybe like UTSA, that considered interest from the Pac-12 and ultimately decided we're in a more stable situation being in our conference as is. Well, the Pac-12, of course, they feel really good about the television contract they're coming up with, which will be anchored on CBS, which, by the way, I have no inside info to that, even though I'm at CBS. But I think that, Texas State is making a bet and a gamble that, we've been in a good situation in the Sun Belt, but the Pac-12 will end up being an even better situation for us.
Non-Pac-12 related question for you here. One of our good friends of our program, and I know he's technically, I think, a co-worker of yours, Josh Pate, he talked about loudest or toughest places to play stadium-wise, and he picked Neyland Stadium in Tennessee. What for you is the toughest place in college football to play venue-wise?
Yeah, I think Neyland's a really good choice. Really, really passionate fans. I think Death Valley at LSU, that's one that always is going to come to mind as one of the top. There's kind of different ways to judge, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Austin. Like, I think the way that that place is set up is just so incredible. The way that it keeps noise in, for people who don't know, I'm a Baylor graduate. They replicated some of like the awnings and stuff to keep noise in the stadium just because of what an incredible job Austin does for how many people it can hold. So those would be some of the first ones that come to mind for me, would be Neyland, Death Valley, and Austin Stadium.
Interesting. Last one for you, Shehan, on your piece on Texas Tech. Fascinating read, diving into it. I just like, what are the expectations? How does this all work out in Lubbock? I mean, they are seriously investing, and it seems like every major sport. We saw the softball team. We've seen all the additions to the football team. How do you think this plays out for them in Lubbock?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm really touching on it that people have read 5,000 words in a story. I didn't know that people still did that anymore. So it's been pretty cool to see the reaction.
Can you make a TikTok of it to explain it to me in 15 seconds? So next time, that'd be great.
I did make a TikTok as well, so hopefully that helped to wrap it up for some people. But I do think that, it's fascinating, right? Like, they acknowledge this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity before the House case really goes into effect, and they wanted to hit that hole and hit it fast. And so this is a potentially once-in-a-lifetime roster that they have on their hands. And everybody in the building, they say it, our goal is we need to get to Arlington. We need to get to Arlington. We need to play for the Big 12. They've never played for the Big 12 since the conference was formed in 1996. They've never won an outright conference championship since 1955. So, you know, there's no expectations that they're going to win the national championship or anything next year, but they would be incredibly disappointed if they are not on the stage with a chance to go to the college football playoff whenever December comes around.
Yeah. Sean, one last question for you. One interesting part of, you know, roster building and program building, the way that Texas Tech has gone about this, really good piece, by the way. I did read all 5,000 words. the general manager role in college football, it's become bigger and bigger. Is this something that in another year or two, this becomes maybe as big as coaches, just given where we're at with NIL, the future of athletes being paid, the whole house settlement stuff? Like, I know we talk about the general manager, or, hey, we say this guy's the GM, but is that a role we talk about on the level with coaches in that sport soon?
Yeah, it's fascinating. There have kind of been two ways that programs have addressed general managers. Well, I guess maybe three ways. One is the coach essentially has their general manager, right? Like, James Blanchard is very much a Joey McGuire guy. The second piece is we've seen some programs hire GMs essentially to be over football. You know, Andrew Luck, Ron Rivera over in the Bay Area, Jim Nagy at Oklahoma. Like, these are guys who they don't necessarily have firing power, although Andrew Luck apparently did. But they are somebody who, when the coach is let go, they might still remain with the program. The third piece is some coaches are like, we don't want a GM. I can be the GM, no problem. Like, I don't need to do all that. And so I think it's really fascinating to see the three approaches. Again, we've seen much more, I would say, of that first bucket of GMs tied to a coach. I'm fascinated to see if we see an expansion of GMs, not necessarily being in charge of coaches, but like you said, maybe having a little bit more equal footing, especially when it comes to resource allocation in this post-house world.
Yeah, great stuff as always. Shehan Jeyaraja, you can go find all his work, CBSSports.com. You can find him on Twitter at Shehan Jeyaraja. He's a national college football writer for CBS Sports. Always appreciate the time. College football will be here before we know it. Thanks, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.